Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 13th in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas. I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today we're talking about gun violence once again. We already had one discussion. With us is Neil Lacey for the first time. And Charles Hayes is back with us again. And Michelle, you're getting to be a kind of a regular here
for this thing.
Okay, the first question I have today is that there have been a lot of gun massacres in America recently. A lot. The latest in Parkland, Florida, and I don't know if I can get qualifies as the latest because there's been one since Parkland, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was the big one. In Parkland, Florida, had high school students as victims who weren't even born when the first in this series took place at Columbine in Colorado. Is it too far to say that mass killings are becoming a normal aspect of our American culture?
I believe they are.
And it's pretty self-evident to me.
Yeah, it would sadly appear to be
becoming a
norm that people are like, oh, normalizing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that was the question. We hear a lot of gun rights supporters say that we don't have a gun problem, we have a mental health problem. What mechanism can be deployed that would keep guns away from the mentally disturbed, which would protect the rights of Americans to buy and sell all kinds of firearms without government involvement in the transaction? Have you thought about this enough to think of a kind of mechanism that we could, you know, impose on society without violating rights of people that feel that they ought to be able to have guns because the Second Amendment says so?
Well, first of all, you can get guns pretty much anywhere. If you can go on a number of websites to buy them without any kind of background checks, which I believe we should have background checks. Among other things.
Okay. That's the current situation. My question is, what do we think we can do in order to develop a mechanism that would prevent the mentally disturbed from acquiring those guns?
Well, and what I was alluding to is, if you're selling a gun, you have the moral responsibility to make sure you're not selling it to a nut job. I was at a gun show one time, and this particular person who was trying to buy a gun from a vendor had a domestic violence restraining order against him. In that instance, that popped up. But I'm not entirely sure that happens all the time.
Now, this took place at a gun show?
Oh, yeah.
Popped up?
Yes.
What, do you have a computer with them or
well,
something?
Well, yeah, you're supposed to go, and when someone wants to buy a gun, you go and get their information, and you go and input it or call the ATF. I've personally never done it. I've just mm-hmm. watched it being mm-hmm. done. And it came back that he had a domestic violence restraining order.
Okay, well, last time I was at a gun show, I bought a .45 revolver mm-hmm. that, and I was going to write the guy a check. He said, oh, no checks, it's cash only. So I paid him cash, that was it. No one checked on me at all.
That happens a lot. It happens more than it should.
Okay. So you're saying in this particular instance, there was some kind of...
But that was back in like 97 or so.
Okay, yeah, we're in a different time now. Charles, what do you think? Well, how would you propose that we set up some kind of system or some kind of ability to keep the mentally disturbed from getting guns?
Well, first we have to depoliticize the issue and treat it as a public safety issue. It's the same as driving in traffic. Furthermore, assault weapons doesn't come under a right. I mean, you can't have a tank. You can't have a bazooka. You know, I mean, we got along just fine without assault weapons. And one of the things about their use is every time they are used, it's a mass killing. this issue has become a matter of identity. I mean, it's politicized to the point to where it's us versus them, my side versus their side. So nobody listens to anybody. You have to care more about solving the problem than you do whose side wins. And the argument is always the perfect is the enemy of the good. If you can't solve all the problems, you don't solve any of the problems. Take a matter of some of the – I mean, you can always say that criminals will always get guns. Mm-hmm. There's truth in that.
Sure.
But a lot of the killings that happen are spur of the moment. They're saying that happened quickly. If you stopped the people that could get access quickly, that would have an effect. Everything you do will have an effect on the bottom line statistically. If you have people wear crash helmets for – who ride motorcycles, the number of deaths from head injuries will go down. Seat belts, the same thing. It'll go down. If you limit the amount of time or put a time measure to get a gun, the people who would do something spontaneously will decrease, and it'll show up statistically.
So am I hearing you say we just need to make it harder for people to get guns?
Well, it's
are you saying that
the amount of people who die from stupid accidents with firearms is amazing. I mean, people will pull the trigger and it doesn't work, and they'll look in the barrel. I mean, when I was a police officer many years ago, I know of some young men who went rabbit hunting, walking side by side, and one of them shot at a noise. I mean, you know, people. It's like if we all of a sudden we said you don't need driver's license anymore, you just go drive. And what do you think that would show up statistically that the people didn't learn how to drive would start to having more accidents?
No, I think there'd be statistical uptick on that. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, I think it's difficult to try and label people mentally ill. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that courts and people's families have trouble with all the time. I think that what Charles is saying, and actually what Neil is saying as well, is that the whole mental health issue is certainly there and something that as a society we need to be looking at and dealing with. The politicization of the whole thing is completely accurate. I think we need to make it more difficult to obtain weapons that cause these mass shootings. And that's not the whole answer, but it is an answer, and it's a step in the right direction.
Well, I'm hearing you say that in order to identify this whole mental health thing to the point where you're actually going to grab somebody and say you can't have a gun because you're mentally wrong for guns is very difficult, very complex,
right.
Very nuanced.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
Yeah. What is the danger of having all firearms registered in a database and all ownership transactions recorded in that database? What's the danger in that?
Well, I want to point out that all of my firearms are in a database somewhere because I bought them from a dealer, and I assume if that dealer was doing his job, he would forward that information to the ATF.
So do you think that's occurring with any efficiency?
As I was reading a study some years back that pointed out that the ATF gets so many of these things that they don't even look at half of them. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't pop up on an initial computer search, it's good to go. So
you're okay with that? You're totally okay with all firearms being registered in the database?
Mine are registered.
Okay, so you're fine with yours being registered. Mm-hmm. Everybody's being registered. You're good with that too?
Yeah, I don't have a problem.
Charles,
with that.
Sure. How do you feel about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah. I see no harm in it.
Right, and I would agree. And to use the analogy of the vehicles are all registered. And if they're not registered, you get in trouble because they're not registered. So, you know, that's certainly not a way to stop mass casualties, but it's a way to maybe get a glimpse and a way to manage it.
Okay, we all feel that there is a need to control it better than it's being controlled now, and that database would help with that. This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer. We are discussing gun violence today. I'm here with Neil Lacey, Charles Hayes, and Michelle Church. Before the war in Afghanistan became the longest war in U.S. history, some 17 years now and counting, the war in Vietnam held that record. In spite of its massive unpopularity among most Americans, it continued on and on through the Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon presidencies. A lot of pundits like to point out Walter Cronkite's commentary as the main factor that American sentiments turned into political strength to end it, but I believe it was the young people. I was a young person at that time myself. In particular, the draft-age college students and soldiers returning from the tour in Vietnam that after many years of public protests produce enough political will to bring it to a close. Are we witnessing a repeat of that same phenomena with these high school students today and gun violence?
I think so. I hope so. You know, there is nothing more powerful than drive and what the word would be of an adolescent who feels wronged. And they
get mad at you.
They get mad at you. And they don't let go. And it becomes a very much an ideological issue for them. And I think that, I mean, certainly in the case of the Vietnam War and certainly in this case as well, they are on the right side. And so I think that that is waking up some people, and it's certainly waking up the politicians who have been, you know, horribly lax and in the pocket of the NRA.
These young kids got it, Charles?
Well, we could really use some idealism. I mean, I'm glad to see it. What's going to happen if we're not careful is the buildup to react against this is going to become so great that we may actually overreach, and the hunters and people who use firearms are going to be hurt when they shouldn't be.
So you think this movement is about taking the guns away from the hunters if it's successful?
But it could become that way. It could become that strict. Every morning I wake up and wonder, well, when I turn on the TV, will today be another shooting or there's emergency coming? I think if we're not careful, the backlash is going to build and build and build, and we're not doing anything, and we usually overdo or underdo or overdo. You know, it's the way it goes. I think there's sort of a frightening thing psychologically in police forces becoming more military. You know, you see them driving down with armored vehicles and all sorts of stuff. But on the other side of that, my thinking about being a police officer today, I was a police officer in the 60s in Dallas, Texas. Today, you could conceivably go into a neighborhood and meet six young men with AR-15s. So in that sense, a SWAT team or a militarized police force makes sense. But it's totally unnecessary. I'm adamant about we need to get the assault weapons off the street.
Okay, Neil, what do you think these young kids got going?
First of all, as a retired school teacher, it makes me happy that these young people are going out and taking a stand on things. And over the years, you know, since the Vietnam War, that has not been the case. But now the momentum is going. I do share Mr. Hayes's sentiments that this. I'm an avid hunter. I'm also a bow hunting safety instructor for the Fish and Game.
Do you share his fear that it could go so far that somebody could come?
We're going to villainize a lot of people who shouldn't be villainized. Yes. Do we need? Well, first of all, let me back up. I look at pictures of people in these protests down south that have an AR-15 over their back, and this is specifically in Texas, where my family was from, walk into a Luby's restaurant with an AR-15. Really? Do you really need that? If you see somebody, I see people walk into Fred Meyer's all the time open carrying a gun. I don't care if you have a gun. I don't want to see it. It freaks people out. If you're going to have a gun, you need to go through the training. You need to know what lethal force training is, and you need to keep that damn thing concealed.
I would even be willing to say that if you really need an AR-15 and you can prove it, we'll let you have one.
Sure.
You know, but just to have them loose on the streets, just to anybody walking about, just totally unnecessary. When I was a police officer, carrying a pistol was against the law. Even in your trunk, I put people in jail from weapons found in their trunk. I think that was looking back, I think that was a bad thing to do. But
to what? To arrest them for that?
Yeah, to arrest somebody. But it was carrying a prohibited weapon, and we didn't have any leeway on it. We weren't, you know, authorized to say you can go now because we don't think that this is a good case.
You think it's better now? Or what do you think was bad about that?
What was bad about it? I mean, if you're on a trip or something and you got a pistol in your trunk and it's unloaded, I don't think you ought to go to jail for
okay.
it.
Okay.
You know, but at the same time, I don't believe you ought to. You necessarily have one to strap yourself on and go into McDonald's to eat lunch either. Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm. why? Yeah.
Yep, I totally agree. I don't know that I am as concerned about it. Going, having the pendulum swing so far to the right, I think that will be the threat that the NRA makes.
That's a tactic that they will use.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that will ever really be a reality because there's a lot of people, I think, you know, everyone in this room maybe, who we own guns, we are responsible gun owners, So we don't see the need to have, you know, to have the police come to our doors and say, give us all your weapons or whatever. I don't think it's ever going to really come to that. I think that there's the threat of that, and it's because that is a great way to politicize it.
Mm-hmm. You have something to add there, Charles?
Well, 3 years ago last February, I was sitting in the living room, and I walked downstairs and went into the garage, and there was a burglar sitting in my chair at my office. He held a gun in the air like this and said, "I don't want any trouble." I ran like a nut into my bedroom.
Pretty good for a guy with your advanced years.
I got my pump shotgun, and as he was exiting the house, I caught him at the corner. He kneeled down, pointed the gun at me again, and I pointed my shotgun at him, told him I'd blow him in two if he didn't drop the gun. I had to tell him three or four times, and he finally dropped it. Long story short, I called the troopers on my cell phone, and a trooper luckily was about a mile away. They put him in jail. He served a year and a half. He's already out. But anyway, I'm not against guns.
Well, there's an obvious story right there where the gun protected you and your property.
Yeah.
Having your gun, you know. Yeah.
And you don't need an AK.
I'd like to point out that there are people that should not have a gun of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago at the fair, the guy that shot himself in the parking lot with his gun. First of all, the fair says no guns. This guy walked around the fair all day long, and then he proceeded to shoot himself in the leg. This is a person who should not have a gun.
But back to my earlier question, what mechanism do we use to make that determination? That is the difficulty we're experiencing with Nicholas Cruz. Everybody saw him down there, and he was somebody that they just said, this guy is dangerous, we need to stop this, but there wasn't the legal mechanism to prevent that from happening. What can we come up with here?
Well,
that will figure this out.
All cases are different, but there was a lot of red flags go up. Somebody, a police officer or somebody, should have said, maybe we need to go over and visit this guy, have a knock and talk to see if he's as nutty as they.
30 some times that happened down there with Nicholas Cruz. They stopped it and had a talk.
And they didn't do anything.
They weren't able to. I didn't think they were able to legally.
You have to be able to prove a definitive threat to either yourself or others. And it's hard to reach that threshold. So maybe that's something we need it to be easier to reach that threshold. Maybe that Again, you know, it goes back to the infringement of rights of people who aren't really a threat. There are a lot of mentally ill people who are homeless. They are not the ones walking into these schools mm-hmm. and shooting people. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that mental illness is – it's certainly – you know, again, this is a very complex issue, and I think that – the whole political rhetoric is these simple one-liner things, you know, don't take our guns.
And that's
take
what we
all
have
the
in
guns.
Our show.
Right. And, you know, so, there isn't a simple answer, but I think that we do need to look at ways to allow folks to be, looked at more closely by mental health officials without, you know, infringing on their rights.
It would be a very well-worded piece of legislation
right.
that would do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, we are there at all.
Right.
The National Instant Criminal Background Check, or NICS, was mandated by the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act passed back in 1993. Mm-hmm. Background checks are not required under federal law for firearms transfers between private parties. Should everyone who owns guns be subjected to a background check? Why or why not? I'll start you, Neil.
I think we should have a background check, but how are you going to police that? That's the big question.
Police the transfer?
Yeah. I mean, you can pass a law, but if somebody sells a gun and nobody knows about it for 10 years, all of a sudden, now this guy's in trouble for selling a gun?
Well, that's the question. That's the question. Should he be in trouble for selling a gun to somebody? Or are we going to – are we at a point now where we need to tighten it up to that extent?
Well, let me put it to you this way. If I have to sell a gun, I take it to a gun dealer. That absolves me from everything. They have to do the background check. Actually, during the process, they might even check me.
So that's your personal way of dealing with
Yeah, that's how I deal with
commerce.
It. I take it to a gun shop and say, sell it for me.
What do you think, Charles?
I don't know. I always keep coming back to thinking about how much trouble you have to go to drive a car. I think you ought to have to go to that much trouble to buy a firearm and use it. I mean, you ought to be able you ought to be trained in all the different things you need to think about. You need to swear that you've never been a stalker or you've never been committed crimes of violent nature and all that kind of stuff. And to me, it's fine to put that in a database. It's fine to put those license a gun. You can have a gun license. So if somebody gets shot and you find a gun, you know, the authorities can look instantly and tell who owned it or where it came from. That's they got a clue right off the bat.
No, but if we have private parties that aren't forced to be participating in that database, then you don't know that information.
No, but if you're a private party and you're selling a gun, then you have to use that person's gun license. I mean, you have a driver's license number, you have a gun license number. You have to use that license number to show, and that would be easy.
Okay. So you're saying that every person basically should, if they want to participate in gun ownership, have their own gun license.
Yep.
Okay.
Right. I would agree with that. It's the same thing with selling a car personally. I mean, you have to sign over
title transfers and stuff.
And
yeah.
So,
and,
you know.
And one thing you can add to this that would help a whole lot, if you had to have gun owner's insurance.
My wife wants that.
Right.
My wife wants gun owner's insurance.
I'd like to point out that the NCIC.
The NICS, yes.
The NICS.
Yeah.
I had access to that when I worked for the state of Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And as part of that training, I had to go up and look myself up. Now, all the information that's in there, the thing I found out that was, it had a list of vehicles that I had owned. But I hadn't owned these vehicles in 15 years. My point here is we're cutting state government and you need data input people to put this stuff in the system. It's just... You know, my stuff was 15 years out of date. So even if you started doing
that. And they didn't even do the guns. They were just doing your cars,
they were
right?
just doing my car. It did show that every contact I'd ever had with a police officer, because I was working at the school and I made some calls on various things, and those were all there. But I found it really interesting that they hadn't a clue on the vehicles I had owned.
Or the guns you owned.
Or the guns.
Yeah, right.
They didn't even show up that I had a concealed carry permit.
We are bridging the gap here on KVRF Radio Free Palmer. We're talking about gun violence, and this is round two of that discussion. We already had one earlier. Does anyone have any idea about what Trump's position is on this issue?
Nobody does.
Nobody?
I don't think he has a position on this or really anything else. It depends on who he's talking to. It depends on what he needs at the moment, whether it's, you know, sitting with those young people.
As long as he has a little 4x8
right,
card that says, I hear you.
Make sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So, no, I think Trump is, I don't know. There isn't a word that has been invented yet.
It's a bad word.
But, it's a very marshmallowy word, I think. I don't think that he is a violent person or would support people who are violent, but I also think that he he just doesn't seem to have any moral compass
regarding this issue
or anything.
Or any issue.
Yeah.
Well, you know about how Trump is thinking there, Neil?
The only thing I can say is this is a dark time for our country, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, to me, the tragedy of this whole thing is there is enough goodwill in this country right now to solve this problem. There really is. Enough people want background checks and they want to end assault weapons and all that kind of stuff. Until we can get to the point where we can reverse Citizens United and we can get public funding for campaign, we're never going to have the same power that lobbyists have.
Mm-hmm.
And we could cut the knees off the NRA in a heartbeat if we could do that.
There seems to be a lot of corporations this time weighing in against the NRA, withdrawing discounts previously awarded to NRA members. Is this a moral or business decision by these corporations?
It's all about the dollar.
So you say business.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I go back to, when does a corporation care about anything except the bottom dollar, period?
You agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think that the public outrage is enough to make them worry about their bottom dollar, you know. So,
and you think that there is enough outrage at this moment after Parkland to get them to believe that?
I think so.
That the outrage is more substantial than the people. There is a segment in our population who love their guns so much that it has created a genuine culture in this country that is not experienced any place else on the planet. There are armed militias in other regions, but these are groups with military objectives. Has the violence that is occurring daily in America a result of the love affair this portion of our populace has with guns? The gun-loving culture? Is the violence a result of that?
I think it plays a part in it, just because it normalizes the whole gun thing. It allows the political rhetoric to go on. I think that people's love of guns is the result of a politicization, which I cannot say that word. Of the whole guns, us versus them, the flag waving. I mean, if you have to have a ginormous flag on the back of your car and you know, an assault weapon attached to your belt when you're taking your kids to school, you know, you have some self-esteem issues. Yeah, it's like you're trying a little too hard.
To me, that. Existential uncertainty in this country with things changing, with app technology encroaching into labor and professional work. This future looks so uncertain that people cling to things that are familiar and people double down on their worldview. And that's what we're seeing all over the country.
With the gun culture in particular.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you. I worry far more about homegrown terrorists than I do anything coming from offshore. Period.
Well, that was a question I wrote today for a future show about Islamic terrorists.
Well, now you have a panelist.
Yeah, right. how many weeks has it been since Parkland? 5 weeks?
It's been a month. Yeah.
Okay. Has the movement lost any momentum? What evidence do you need to see in order to conclude that this time there's real change going to happen?
November 2018. I think if the midterm elections don't change, it will, to me, show that this is a, you know, another, for whatever reason, impotent effort by the citizenry to take back control of their government. They just feel so underpowered that they give up.
I think there will likely be a number of more incidents before November, too.
Sadly.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're just occurring daily. It just seems that, you know, you can't get through a week without several a year of. So what evidence do you need to see, Neil, that makes you think that this time
people come out to vote.
So we're still looking at the election.
We're still trying to get people to vote. When our elections typically run about 17.5% of the public voting, that's a problem. My dad used to tell me, he said, I went to war on other continents for people's right to vote, and people can't get out to vote. That's an issue to me.
Well, why is goodwill and equity and equality such a hard sell?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Is it really that, or is it use any message you can to get to power, and whatever keeps me in power, I'll keep with that message?
I don't know. From my perspective, I'd like to live and let live and have see everybody treated like human beings. Everybody is an end in themselves instead of a means to an end. And I don't see what the harm of that is.
It's not the harm. I don't know if anybody can identify harm as much, but seeing that as something that is appealing enough as a message just doesn't seem to be important for the politicians these days.
We are innately tribalistic human beings. We have a deep-seated lack of tolerance for free riders, afraid of them. And there's good evolutionary sense to be that way. But we need to patch it. We patch it with this thing we call education, but we're not doing a very good job of it.
You're absolutely right about the education issue. If more people took safety classes, I'm a safety guy, that's my thing. If more people took safety classes, we wouldn't have these problems and we could weed out the unresponsible.
Again, we're back to what Michelle was saying, though. It's hard to figure out exactly how to have a legally effective way to weed out the unresponsible.
And, you know, I worry about that. You know, there was a bill that was going through the legislature just for that here recently. I forget what it was. My whole problem with that bill was due process. You could get five people to say, I don't like Joe Schmo over here, and go in front of a judge and say he's mentally defective. That's the due process part I have a problem with. If we could figure out how to do that correctly.
Well, there are ways to do that. I mean, there are professionals that are able to make determinations on whether someone at that moment, whether they are mentally capable of a violent act, but they can't predict. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, is they can't predict in a week or a month or a year whether or not that person is going to be mentally deficient enough. I mean, anybody that kills another human being, whether it's one person or 20 people, they are mentally ill, mm-hmm. in my mind.
Mine too.
You know, so.
we have to come to grips with the fact that we can't stop it completely, but we can affect it mm-hmm. positively.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, look at Australia. Australia just said no more of those. Yep. And look, they haven't had a mass killing since the 19—it was last century for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back, you segued me into this next question. Back to Trump. He said, grab the guns first, worry about due process later. Anybody have a problem with that?
That's what our country's built on.
Well,
due process.
And again, that's because of who he was speaking to. And 2 hours later, after the NRA gently took him by the shoulders and reminded him of what he owes them, he completely reversed that. So, you know.
So we're not worried about
that's
Trump.
Just blah, blah, blah.
As long as you're the last person who speaks to him, you're okay.
So whether due process is part of Trump's depends on the audience, I guess. Okay, Nicholas Cruz was identified by multiple people in the community as dangerous. The police, the FBI, social services received heavy criticism for not stopping a clearly identified danger to society. Under the law as currently constructed, giving gun owners the Second Amendment rights, is there anything that local government could have done legally in this day to stop Cruz from obtaining his AR-15 shooting up a school?
It's awfully hard. It's awfully hard. When I was a police officer, I can't begin to count the times when I have told a woman, for example, there's nothing I can do until your husband hurts you. You know, I can tell
that
you
that had to break your heart.
I can tell you to go see Judge, can't think of his name, and get a peace bond. But then what happens when he breaks that? You know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's really, really hard. There's no simple solution to that. But there are some steps to take, and we can come up with them.
Mm-hmm. Incremental things that would slowly erode that danger.
Yep.
Okay, is it possible? Now, this is me kind of stepping out on a limb here with this one. Is it possible that one reason gun lovers are so opposed to gun registries is that they project some future event in their personal lives when they'll feel the need to commit a homicide and have it easier to escape prosecution because their weapon wasn't accounted for in a way available to law enforcement?
I don't think a person committing a felony thinks that far ahead. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I think it's just plain old paranoia.
that caused that question to be asked?
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, again, it goes back to the political rhetoric of the NRA telling people who probably never will commit a crime like that their rights are being taken from them. I don't think that the criminal element, if you will, really, like Neil says,
thinks
about that. That's not a concern of theirs.
So you think that the movement is comprised of people that don't really have that that belief that they'll need to kill somebody, and this is how.
Right. Well, I think it's a lack of education. It's a lack of. Really, people having an understanding of what their government means, of what history is, of why these amendments are there, or why, you know, why the Constitution says what it says. I think people are threatened by their ignorance, and they're willing to listen to the pundits of, you know, they're going to take your guns and they're going to, you know, whatever.
For 6 or 7 years, it was not possible to buy 22 ammunition in a gun shop or at Walmart or any place like that because Obama was going to get your guns.
Right. Yeah, that was a brilliant move on the part of the gun makers and the ammunition manufacturers.
You segued me again. This is the most segueing panel I ever had. I remember when Obama first became president, there was a huge panic to buy ammunition because of an internet-generated belief that Obama was buying it all up. This panic buying spree led to actual shortages, which Charles just referred to, because the manufacturing infrastructure could not make enough bullets fast enough. It got that bad. Fear-based propaganda is all it was.
Right.
How effective has that been, fear-based propaganda, in this this particular issue?
Brilliant.
Well, we could probably go the rest of our lives without anybody needing any more 22 ammo.
Is this its most effective tool for the gun rights constituency, this fear-based propaganda?
I think so. Yeah. Totally.
Every time there's a shooting like this, the weapons start selling faster. Mm-hmm. You know,
right?
Because the paranoia hits, they're going to come. They're going to take our guns.
So you think more weapons were purchased after Parkland?
Oh yeah, there's been an uptick. An uptick in buying every time one of these happens.
Mm-hmm. And it is buying what the home protection guns, like
pretty
revolvers
much
and stuff like that. Or,
no, I think it's
AR-15s.
I think AR-15s in particular.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And it's become, this sort of, you're not going to take away my rights to have an AR-15, by God, and I'm going to buy one for myself and my kid, and I'm going to claim that it's for home protection, which is ridiculous, or it's for hunting, which is equally ridiculous. It's an assault weapon designed to assault people.
So you're describing a mindset that is occurring, basically, and the NRA has actually allied itself with that mindset, and has things the way it is. Do we need to attack the mindset, or do we need to? How are we going to come up with ways to overcome this?
The whole thing is so incredibly senseless. The NRA could become a great, great organization
as it was once
if they just use common sense here, and if they concentrated on firearm safety and just hammered that and hammered it and hammered it. I mean,
I think Neil mentioned it earlier. It's about the almighty dollar, because what the NRA has become then.
Is no more than a lobbying wing.
That's a lobbying wing for manufacturers.
And the insistence that everybody needs to be armed. Every time I write about this subject in print, I bring out the point. I said, go to your nearest Walmart and walk through and think, do you think everybody you meet in there should be armed? And people say no.
No, that's true. But again, how do we differentiate who can and who can't?
Right.
That's...
I also seem to think that you need to enforce some laws. I work at the fair all summer long, or during the fair. Last summer, I probably saw 5 or 6 people who were openly carrying guns in there. Now, it says on your ticket, it says on the front door, no guns. But you think I could get anybody to even ask these people? It's hard to find a security person at the fair.
Wow, that is a big lack of security then. If you can't find a single person there. What happens if there's a fight at the fair or something like that? No security comes around?
No, they get there, but they're few and far between.
That makes me not want to go to the fair.
For a concealed carry permit holder, you're not supposed to go to bars. You're not supposed to go to federal buildings, women's shelters, hospitals. There's a list of schools. And people don't seem – they think that I can carry my gun anywhere. And most of these people think they can carry a gun anywhere don't have the safety training you need, i.e. the concealed carry.
Well, that's a common theme of the gun rights constituency, is that we already have plenty of laws on the books. We don't need any more laws. We just need enforcement of the current laws. How's that playing out?
We need to enforce the laws. Well, first of all, I go back to the guy who shot himself in the leg at the fair. This person should not have a gun, period. I suppose if I could talk to him for 10 minutes in a safety situation, I'd say, I don't think you should have one of these because walking is a problem for you.
Yeah, but you don't have the authority to stop.
I know I don't, and that's the problem. Yeah. But I think we need to look at some laws.
So what do you think about that, Charles? You're enforcing the laws down in Dallas. That was your job, to enforce the laws. Were the laws not good enough, or were they unenforceable, or what was the story there?
Back in those days, they were very strict about firearms. You could have a shotgun in a car, but if you had a pistol in the car, loaded or unloaded, you went to jail. I put a slew of people in jail.
Now, the conviction for that would be how much time, having a revolver in your truck.
I don't remember. I imagine it was just a fine.
Okay.
I mean, they did spend some time in jail, but I imagine it was probably a misdemeanor fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't a felony. I don't recall. But and there weren't any AR-15s at the time.
Michelle, the law's not good enough, or is the enforcement, or what do you think about that?
I think it's both. And, again, the And I don't know if it's just the—I hate to just say that it's just the Republicans, because it really isn't. It's just our whole political system is power is gained through greed, fear, and ignorance. Mm-hmm. And so they want people to stay afraid. They want people to stay ignorant, and they want to stay greedy. And so this whole claim of we need smaller government, we need to – I don't want to pay taxes. All of that sort of thing, it on its face sounds like, well, yeah, nobody wants to pay taxes. But, you know, again, it's the price of civility is you contribute to the safety of your community. And so to me, America's – the whole mindset of Americans needs to be changed from this ideal that we have the greatest system, because we really don't.
And I think we kind of need to realize that at some point.
Yeah, right. And I think, unfortunately, things are going to get really bad in a lot of ways before folks wake up. Maybe – and I'm hoping that these teenagers that are now – involving themselves are going to continue to educate themselves and are going to not get, you know, sucked into the whole, you know.
Media circus.
Right, yeah. So.
We're way down the list in a whole lot of key quality of life indicators in comparison to other developed nations in the world. Mm-hmm. So far so that the only thing we're great at is saying we're great.
Right, yeah, exactly.
We do say that enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these kids, I saw Emma Gonzalez on TV the other day, and they asked, I forget who interviewed her, but asked her, you know, what do you think was the main thing that got her all this notoriety? She says, I frankly think it's my haircut, because she has that butch cut. Mm. And I was thinking about that as she was saying it, and I remember the speech where she says, we call BS. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah.
But what really impressed me about that moment was, number one, her hair, was because she had that butch cut. Number two, her just genuine, I guess the word is passion, but the heartfelt need she was expressing is, this is something that we have to do now. And then they had a bunch of them on 60 Minutes from Parkland last week, and when they talked about her, it was just she could barely keep it together still, because of how hurt she was because she lost her friends that way.
The notion of small government is an empty idea. Effective government is the product,
right.
And we can't have a nation with Homeland Security being what it is and be small.
I mean, right. Yeah. It's just the military is the only thing that people nowadays seem to think needs to be big, and there's a lot of money being made by military contractors. In building, you know, building up the whole military complex and the whole, you know, America, the great, you know, waving our flags with, you know, attached to our weapons and support our soldiers, except when they come home from war all wounded. You know, it's just the level of ignorance is stunning to me, and that's the most depressing part, I think, of what's going on today, is that overall our citizenry is so ignorant on how our government works and how successful communities really exist.
Wow. Okay, we're taping this show on March 21st. It's to be broadcast on March 27th and 28th, which is next Tuesday and Wednesday. Between these days, today and our broadcast, lies March 24th, which is the date that the high school students are planning their march in Washington. We already saw just this week, or it was last week, I guess, the walkout across the nation on the 14th, the walkout that occurred, thousands of schools, actually. What do you expect to happen this weekend? and will it produce the desired result?
I hope it's big.
It's going to be big, but I'm afraid it's going to fall on deaf ears.
I think that I hope it's big, too. There, I haven't really heard anything planned in Alaska, but in Anchorage, nothing out here in the valley. But I think that it's a buildup of, you know, it's the Me Too thing. It's the it's sort of people are beginning to sort of see that they do have the power of the voice, and, you know, government of the people, by the people, for the people, is starting to sink in. And I think that the organizations like the NRA and whoever it is that's controlling the Republican Party and maybe the Democratic Party as well, are seeing that, and they're afraid of that. And so they are going – so I don't know what's going to happen in the long term, but I hope that it's a continuing buildup of passion on the part of the populace.
And you see a first major step experienced or manifested this November with
right.
the
yes,
with the November
elections. I think so. Yeah. I mean, the number of young people, 17 and 18, that are going to vote for the first time is a larger number than the baby boomers. And so they could effectively flip this on its ear. And I am really, really hoping that that's what happens.
There's been some huge historical flips. 1974 was a big congressional flip whenever Nixon was when he had to resign due to Watergate. But see, that's not even ours. That's his phone ringing. Anyway, we have about 2 minutes to go. Any final words you'd like to give us here on gun violence? Neil?
I think we need to have more training. We need to have more safety training. We need to have more education about it.
Charles?
I don't know if we could get to the bottom of the psychological notion of why safety is a harder sell than random shootings. I just don't understand why it's – I mean, we're
– Seems like you have trouble with making psychological sense out of political realities.
We all have that problem.
Is that your issue with Langer?
Just it's just senseless to me, totally senseless.
Right. Michelle?
I think that, you know, you start with background checks. You start with the requirement for people to register their guns. Not everybody's going to do it. That's fine. I read something. People through attrition, that sort of control, gun control, does end up working. So I think that's where you start, is that you have a registration requirement, you have background checks as part of that registration requirement, and maybe you do have insurance. And then if a crime is committed and you don't have those things, then the penalty is increased as a result.
Incremental steps. I think we all like that. Go ahead, Charles. Last word.
Also, I meant to make the point. In 1996, the lobbyists made it against the law to study these things.
All right. The CDC
no longer
is allowed to do that. Yeah. That was a gun lobby victory there.
We need to get rid of that.
Thank you, Neil, Charles, Michelle. Wonderful discussion today. And that is Bridging the Gap for this issue on gun violence. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters.